Welcome to Local Talk, the Friday edition on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarba. I'm your host for the hour with engineer Mike Murphy, our steady hand at the controls, and co-host Mike Metz is here, keeper of the Prairie Winds Prairie. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, Pat.
What's new on the prairie?
Hey, I started to see the gray ghost. Some of those harriers have started to show up.
Oh, a northern harrier. Now, that's a hawk that courses back and forth, kind of low over the prairie.
That's right, looking for meadow voles.
And listening, I understand. Northern harrier has a disco face, like an owl, to listen for the mice as opposed to its keen eyesight.
Mm-hmm.
So relies on both. The gray ghost. So the males are gray?
Males are kind of a silvery gray, and the females and first-year birds are a brown color.
So a nice addition to the prairie.
Yeah.
This time of year. Hey, there's music to announce tonight, Burning Sensations at 5:30. And this is for the Ames Foundation annual event, and it's going to be at the Ames Ford and Lincoln dealership at 123 Airport Road here in Ames. So lots to look forward to in Ames and lots to learn about on this Local Talk for October 21st, 2022.
Well, with a high temperature forecast today back into the 80s and a low of around 53 degrees, the winds will be mild from 4 to 8 miles per hour. Sunshine is in the forecast for the weekend, with 82 again on Saturday and 85 on Sunday. So get it while you can comes to mind, as Janis Joplin would sing. Cold front on Monday, yet only down into the 60s, with the possibilities of rain, and we're sure hoping for rain. 54 is forecast into Wednesday, and man, I'll take that, Pat. Our sunshine will be 7:34 a.m. Sunrise will be 7:34 a.m. and sunset this evening is at 6:24 p.m. And the quarter moon is waning, and that goes through the cosmos tonight, and currently it is 46 degrees here in Ames.
Later in the hour, we'll have candidate Samantha Cox for the Senate District 27 and a whole lot more. Yet first, let's welcome Dennis Hart with a news summary from this past week from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
New polls show Iowa's senatorial race is tight, but the governor's race is not. Early voting starts in Iowa, and the Ames City Council greenlights a new industrial park, all part of what made news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's start with last Friday's paper, which reported that the Mercy One Medical Center in Des Moines was still being affected by a ransomware attack that had taken its computer systems down, and the impact was taking its toll on patients. Mercy One is part of the Common Spirit Health System. The entire system, which includes more than 140 hospitals in 21 states, has been hit by the ransomware attack. The Trib also had a story about how Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds is riding a wave of popularity among conservatives here and across the nation as she is running for re-election in Iowa. The Republican governor has a big lead in both fundraising and polling as the election draws near. She's running on tax cuts and her response to the coronavirus pandemic. In another election-related story, the Trib reported that State Auditor Rob Sand said 7 Iowa auditors had paid their temporary election workers at rates not authorized by their county's Board of Supervisors during the 2020 election. The unauthorized pay amounted to more than $37,000 in those counties. 5 additional counties could not provide documentation of the rates paid to their election staff during the 2020 primary and general elections, and 8 counties showed discrepancies in the number of hours paid to temporary election workers or the number of miles reimbursed. This during an audit of only 16 of Iowa's 99 counties. And last Friday, the Trib reported that the Sioux City-based Baumgars Farm Store chain will become the nation's second biggest farm and ranch retailer after acquiring Orchelin Farm and Home Stores. Baumgars said the acquisition will give it 180 stores in 15 states and add 1,400 employees. It also said it would acquire a 330,000-square-foot distribution center in Missouri. The Orchelin stores eventually will be rebranded as Baumgars. Saturday's paper reported that newly reported coronavirus cases had decreased for the 6th straight week in Iowa. 1,718 new cases were reported in the state, an average of 245 a day. That's down from the 265 cases a day reported the week before. Hospitalizations from the virus also went down from 196 to 174. and 28 more deaths from the coronavirus were reported last week, raising the death toll from the virus in Iowa to 10,125 since the pandemic started. The Trib also reported that the Ames City Council had approved plans for a new industrial park in the far northeast part of the city, in spite of concerns by neighbors about the development's potential effects on water quality. Last February, the city had annexed land between Dayton Avenue and the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Animal Disease Center to the east and Isaac Walton League Park to the west. The council approved a preliminary plat for about 73 acres for what would be called the North Dayton Industrial Park at 2421 Dayton Avenue. Stormwater infrastructure had some neighbors concerned. Some runoff is planned to be diverted to an existing pond to the northwest, and most will be sent to a retention pond to be built at the southwest part of the property. Runoff from the middle of the plat is also planned to be routed through Isaac Walton. There was also word that the CEO of the Iowa State Fair is retiring. Gary Slater has spent more than two decades at the helm of one of the biggest and most storied events in the nation. The Iowa State Fair consistently exceeds 1 million fairgoers a year, and just this year set a new one-day attendance record when 128,000 visitors walked through the gates on the event's second Saturday. And the Trib reported on the death of Larry Adams, the Boone County historian who had died in a car crash near Granger. The 75-year-old Adams had served as director of the Mamie Dowd Eisenhower Birthplace Museum from 1980 until his retirement in 2006. Sunday's Trib had word about the candidates running for the Story County Board of Supervisors and for Story County Attorney. In the supervisors' race, Democratic incumbents Lisa Heddens and Linda Merkin are facing Republicans Kara Warmey and James Wright, Jr. Voters will choose two candidates to fill the at-large positions. In the race for Story County Attorney, incumbent Democrat Timothy Meals faces Republican challenger Nicholas Pilcher. The Trib also reported on a new study by Common Good Iowa that showed state workers lose about $900 million a year to overtime payment violations, minimum wage law violations, and other forms of wage theft. The Trib also had a story about how tens of thousands of people are traveling every year to a classic car museum in West Okoboji, where an estimated $6 million worth of inventory is at Okoboji Classic Cars, owned by Toby Shine. The collection attracts enthusiasts, historians, collectors, and families looking for an unusual experience. On any given day, Shine displays 60 or 70 vehicles in two showrooms that are hand-painted with murals to recreate downtown Spencer, Iowa, back at a time when America was first sending astronauts to the moon. Toby Shine was born in Spencer. And of course, the Trib reported on Iowa State University's football team and its game against the University of Texas in Austin last Saturday. Texas won 24-21. Tuesday's Trib reported on the Des Moines Register Iowa poll involving Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley and his Democratic challenger Mike Franken. The poll shows Grassley's lead over Franken has narrowed to 3 percentage points with just a few weeks left until Election Day. The poll indicates this is Senator Grassley's toughest election fight in 40 years. Grassley leads Franken 46% to 43%. Grassley is seeking his eighth term in the Senate. The Trib also had a story about the Boone County supervisor race featuring incumbent Democratic supervisor Stephen Duffy running against Republican challenger Sean Bryant. There was also word that the Come and Go convenience store chain had launched a new menu featuring fresher fare than traditional gas station food. The menu includes freshly prepared items such as small handheld sandwiches, grab-and-go burritos, and bowls with a base of brown rice and shredded cabbage. The new food options will be available in all Des Moines metro area come-and-go stores by the end of this year. And the Trib had front-page pictures showing the Bacon Expo that took place at Iowa State University last weekend. The event was run by students to help folks who love bacon learn about pigs and taste new creations. All proceeds were donated to charity. Wednesday's Trib reported on the Monday night televised debate between Republican Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds and her Democratic opponent Deidre DeGeer. They offered much different visions on abortion, tax policy, and education funding, among other things. On abortion, DeGeer said what she called Reynolds' crusade against choice has harmed access to reproductive care across Iowa. DeGeer said she, DeGeer, wants to codify the right to abortion in Iowa that previously had been established in the Roe v. Wade decision, which the U.S. Supreme Court struck down earlier this year. Reynolds has asked a state court to reinstate into law a ban on abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, and she said during the debate she would not weigh in on the issue while the court is deciding the matter. She asked DeGeer whether she supports abortion until the moment of birth. DeGeer said, in her words, "My personal belief has no space in a woman's doctor's appointment." The two also disagreed on funding for state education. The governor has advocated letting parents use state funding to transition their children from public to private schools or to homeschooling. DeGeer opposes that and says the state should spend more money on public schools. And Reynolds praised the tax cut packages she has signed as governor. DeGeer said those cuts are short-sighted. The Trib also reported on the candidates running for Boone County Recorder. Incumbent Democrat Chris Duncan is facing Republican challenger Aaron Canfield. And there was word that early voting would begin in Iowa this past Wednesday for the November general election. Yesterday's Trib reported on a new Des Moines Register poll that showed Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds has a commanding lead over her Democratic opponent Deidre DeGeer, with the election just weeks away. Reynolds leads DeGeer by 17 percentage points, 52% to 35%. The governor leads among evangelicals, men, and rural residents. DeGeer leads among likely voters with a college degree, among city dwellers, and among women. Overall, a plurality of Iowans, 47 to 43%, believe the state is headed in the right direction, and 55% of all Iowans hold a favorable view of Reynolds. The Trib also had more on the new Des Moines Register poll that had showed the race between incumbent Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley was close. Grassley led his Democratic opponent Mike Franken 46% to 43%. That poll shows that age could be a factor in Grassley's reelection. He is 89 years old, and the poll shows 60% of likely voters say his age is a concern. 86% of Democrats think Grassley's age is concerning, 64% of independents believe that, and 37% of Republicans do as well. The Trib also reported on the State House District 48 race in Boone County, where incumbent Republican Phil Thompson is facing off against Democrat Penny Vossler and no-party candidate Luke Barnes. And there was a front-page story on Halloween haunted homes and events in central Iowa. Included among them, the Ames Haunted Forest on South 4th Street, Adventureland's Phantom Fall Fest in Altoona, Lynn's Haunted House in Des Moines, the Sherman Hill Neighborhood, also in Des Moines, and more. You can read all about it in yesterday's Tribune. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart. Thanks for listening. I'm taking the weekend off now, but planning to be right back here Monday morning at 7 on Local Talk with word on what's been making news around the state. Until then, let's both do our best to have a safe, happy, and healthy weekend.
Me down, I heard the sounds echo softly in the breeze, in the clouds, I hear them now. We used to be so free, get back to who we used to. In a cage we could never change. We used to be so free, get back to who we used to.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News, and that was Ray Sarasoga. We're running with the wolves again. We used to be so free. Get back to who we used to be. Let's welcome Senate candidate Samantha Cox, and she's running for the Senate District 22nd. Hello.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, we are. Great to hear your voice. Now, I introduced you as Samantha, but I also see Sam. What do you prefer?
I go by Sam.
You go by Sam. Okay. Well,
no.
Please tell us some things about yourself.
Sure. So, first of all, I'm going to apologize. I'm in transit. I'm between two coffee shops.
You're a busy woman these days.
I really am. I am from Grinnell, Iowa, raised here, graduated with the class of 1987 from our public high school, went on to college at Ellsworth Community College in Iowa Falls. After that, just kind of did my stint in the retail management world and then kind of came home to roost, right? This is a beautiful place to raise children. I have two of my own sons. I remarried 15 years ago, and I gained a lovely daughter. And then 4 years ago, we were gifted with a lovely foster daughter who we've had for just about 4 years.
Oh, wonderful.
So my husband is a military veteran, twice deployed to Iraq and once to Afghanistan. So we've gone through a few things there. And then about 10 years ago, we purchased our first coffee shop. And in 2019, we opened our drive-thru. So we're just busy, small-town family, entrepreneurs, you know, just trying to make it in the world.
I see. And there seems to be a lot of justification for running for public office. But is there anything else? And why are you are a candidate?
Sure. You know, the number one reason that I ran for this position was because my opponent, Annette Sweeney, was running unopposed. And I firmly believe that, you know, in this process, we deserve a choice.
I absolutely. In Senate District 27, now that is a portion of our listening area in Hardin County. Primarily, what does that cover?
Can you hear me?
Yes, or...
Okay.
So I'm curious about Senate District 27. What area does that cover?
So District 27 covers Poweshiek, Tama, Grundy County, Hardin County, and a small western sliver of Black Hawk County.
So kind of east of us here in Ames.
Right.
Yeah.
East and south.
Well, when did you, so is this a recent development to get interested in politics?
I mean, I think I've always been on the edges, right? I think there's a lot of us out there that are maybe not heavily ensconced in it, but that are on the edges. I've always thought about running for an office. To me, it probably was just going to be more local when I started. You know, I've pondered the school board. I've pondered the mayor position. So this opportunity came up. We're empty nesters. Our youngest daughter graduated in May, and so I had what I thought would be a little extra time on my hands. But to be honest, this any kind of political race really does take over your life. But it's been a wonderful learning opportunity. I wouldn't change anything about it other than I wish we had more time.
Well, as the Democratic candidate, could you list your priorities you would like to focus upon if you're elected to the Iowa Senate?
Absolutely. My first priority is public education and making sure that we keep supporting public education, keep funding public education, increasing the spending for that area to the recommended amount, not necessarily what we as a government feel is enough, but what is actually being recommended on a statewide level. And we are underfunding it at this point. I took a job as a custodian during the pandemic at one of our elementary schools and had a really great opportunity to see what goes on within those walls. And it was a very eye-opening experience for me. So, you know, passing a private school voucher is something that would be debilitating for the public education system in Iowa. So that's my first piece of the puzzle. The second piece is healthcare and mental health care. You know, we are struggling with enough beds in the state of Iowa to help the people that are in need. And I feel like there can be more done, you know, in order to address this situation. Third piece, of course, always agriculture. While I am not an expert on agriculture. I certainly have a lot of friends that are in the industry, and, you know, just always making sure that, you know, the small family farms are surviving and thriving, because they do make up a lot of our rural area, our rural towns, and it's what keeps Iowa alive. You know, at the end, we always have the reproductive choice, and that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I can't help but wonder, if you have a coffee shop, is that a gathering place for some of the local farmers?
I have two that are my early morning. Well, I guess I have a retired one as well. So we have an early morning coffee group, right? It's not like something structured. It's just very fortunate that I have four or five gentlemen that come in first thing in the morning when no one else is around.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit more fun because I literally am the only Democrat in my group of Republicans. But they're some of my dearest friends, and we have really great conversations, and it's a lovely way to gain insight, not only into that industry, but also, you know, into, on the other side of the aisle.
Yeah.
And find things in common.
I'm sure it is. Is there anything else that you're learning, while campaigning, hitting the streets, so to speak?
Right. You know, I've just been super fortunate to be, I guess, exposed to a lot of different things and a lot of different thought processes. And I think what's important to me is that I don't ever, you know, look at anybody and have a conversation with them based on whether they're Republican or Democrat. I want to talk to them as, you know, one human being to another, one Iowan to another. I want to find what we have in common, the things that we want to change together. You know, I certainly am in a Republican area. It is a stronghold in the rural parts of Iowa. My husband is a Republican. My family are Republicans. So I'm kind of like the lone wolf out there. But we have a lot of things in common, and I really strive to focus on that, like what we want to do for the state of Iowa, you know, to make it a better inclusive place.
You mentioned the education priority that you have, and the voucher system. Could you help us flesh that out? I'm sure a lot of the listeners are familiar with the governor's plan. How do you see this moving forward with the private voucher or the education voucher plan that's been proposed and discussed?
I mean, I guess my first concern is, again, rural Iowa. Right. A lot of people out there, a lot of politicians out there are going to tell you that they don't have a private school to choose from. So this isn't going to affect them. I think the important thing to note is in the last 10 years, I believe Iowa has lost about 100 schools. So we went from 1400 down to about 1300. And as we all know, I mean, those schools are like the central spot of any community. Not only are they there for our children to provide for them in a lot of different ways, but they're also there as a place of employment. And so it's just super important for me, for us to keep schools open in our rural communities. Aside from that, I think if you're going to do a private school voucher system, then you've got to look at what kind of oversight does that involve? They're going to be receiving public funds. You know, what are we going to do differently in order to make sure that our public tax dollars are being used in a way that benefits everyone, and the way that they're teaching, the way that they're accepting students. I think that's really important. But the bottom line is, we can't afford to take money out of the public school system, which is already underfunded, and, you know, be putting that in places that aren't necessarily all inclusive or really being overseen in the way that they should be.
Well, I see. I'm kind of fascinated by your statement that you're a Democrat in a Republican household and with a lot of Republican friends. My mom was from Idaho, and she considered herself a black sheep. And
right.
And she would but her opinions were very much Millie's own. I mean, she
yeah.
So how do other people describe you, do you think?
I think people are going to tell you that I'm very direct and I'm very straightforward. I answer questions directly. I don't try to like sugarcoat that or beat around the bush or be creative and not actually answer it. I'm going to absolutely give you my own thoughts on that. And in that, I will always say, you know, if I'm not certain about something, I definitely reach out to people. I want to learn. I want to be educated. I want to make time for people and discuss other points of view and make sure that I'm growing as a person. So I think people would just describe me as just very direct.
Very direct, and I appreciate that very much here, particularly as we review a lot of our candidates this time of year. And this may kind of link into what your priorities were, but the question is, what do you think are the three most important needs of voters in your district?
So, you know, I think that's interesting. I had a conversation yesterday with a paper in Grundy County, and I mean, every county is different, right? So in Hardin County, you know, we have a lot of conversations about eminent domain and the CO2 pipeline. In Grundy County, they are a more conservative county, and they are a pro-life county, and they're very concerned, you know, with that issue. I think when you get down into Tama County, it's about employment and the loss of jobs. And I think in Tama County and in Poweshiek County, we have a lot of conversations about public education. And so, you know, every county is different. And so it's trying to find a balance in those four counties. But again, I want to know that I want to hear everyone, and I want to represent all of those counties to the best of my ability.
In those counties, do you have a favorite place that you like to spend time?
I mean, I always go to the coffee shop, right?
Okay.
So, Hardin County, Iowa Falls has the Coffee Attic. There's a little coffee shop in Eldora called the Red Coffee Cup, I think, maybe. Grundy Center has a lovely little coffee shop that I cannot think of its name right now. Tama, I did not find a coffee shop in the Tama County area in the places that I had been yet, so I'm going to apologize if there is one there. And then, of course, in my own hometown, I go to my places. I go to the Grind in Brooklyn. There's Vivarium in Montezuma. So I always hit up coffee shops. One, because I want to support small entrepreneurs. And two, it's a lovely way to keep my creative juices flowing and see if there's anything new or interesting out there that I'm not doing that I could or should be doing. So, yeah, those are my places.
Wonderful, wonderful. So we've got a couple minutes. What are the messaging that you would like to share with our KHOI community radio listeners this morning in wrapping up?
You know, I think the most important thing for people to know about me is I understand that this is the first time that I'm running. I understand that this is a large learning curve. But, you know, everybody is new at some point in time in their life in a position that they are striving to achieve. And the bottom line is I am super accessible. I'm very authentic. I'm very direct. I am here, you know, to hear, you know, what our county wants and needs. And I feel like, you know, we are skipping over the middle and moving, you know, very far right. And I think that Iowa, by and large, is not a super conservative state. I feel like there's a lot of room in the middle that needs to be addressed, that needs to be, supported. And I'm a huge believer in, obviously, the middle-class worker, the middle-class families. I feel like that's where we all are in this state. And so, you know, our needs are not being met. We are being overlooked not only on a state scale, but obviously on a national scale. And something's got to change. You know, we can't keep supporting all of the policies and procedures that are being put in place in the tax bracket that we are in without getting more help than what we're getting.
I appreciate your messaging this morning. Senate candidate Sam Cox, running for District 27. Thank you so much for being on Local Talk.
Thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate that. And by the way, my oldest son graduated from Iowa State, so go Iowa State.
Oh, go Clones. Okay, go Cyclones. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Cox. Yeah. So it's 30 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to KHOI Community Radio on 89.1 FM. And I'm Pat Schlarbaum on Friday Local Talk with co-host Mike Metz, and engineer Mike Murphy is here. Let's welcome Susan Guiazda, Public Information Officer for the City of Ames. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good today. How are you?
I'm good as well. Beautiful morning. It's going to be a terrific weekend. Some great weather out there. I hope people get out and do some yard work.
And is there a link to an announcement there as they rake up their leaves?
It's an idea. We've talked about it before. You have choices. You can rake up your leaves. You can mulch them and leave them exactly where they are. Or you could take them to Yard Waste Free Day. We know that those come every fall. Actually, you know, we've moved away from the title Yard Waste Free Day because we think it gives the wrong idea. There actually is a charge. Free days are taxpayer supported. They are no charge yard waste days. And we have four of them planned in the fall, with the first one being Saturday, October 29th. I think I've got the right day there.
Okay.
Look at my calendar.
Yeah. Yeah.
The end of the month, we have the first one coming up. Again, no charge yard waste days. Always, if you're so inclined, you can go ahead and leave those leaves exactly where they are. They're good for the environment. They're good for pollinators that need habitat. And I just think it's something that everybody should consider. Maybe not carting so many of them around and instead just leaving them exactly where they're at.
Yeah.
So that first one is coming up on Saturday, October 29th. They happen from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And you can get more information on the dates in November and one all the way into December on our website.
Okay. I see you brought a guest with you today.
I did. I brought Neil Weiss with me from the Water and Pollution Control Department. The water has a lot going on year-round. You might think that it's only something to use in the summer, but of course, summer usage does increase. But usage, of course, of water is a year-round topic. Conservation is always a good topic to talk about. Things surrounding water, ways we can conserve water, that's all part of the Water Department's message. But also they've had some changes in their facilities recently in that we have a relatively new water plant, and that meant it was time to demolish the old water plant. And that project is continuing. It's kind of exciting to watch it. And so Neil's been shepherding that project and has an update.
Welcome, Mr. Weiss. Hello.
I think he's gone. He dropped off.
Oh, gee. He dropped off. We admitted him, and now. So let's talk about.
I'm sure he'll come back.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, if we can just swing back to Halloween just quickly.
Okay.
One of the most important questions that I get every year, and I start getting the calls in the summer, is when is trick or treat? And I know that it is a big deal for families with small children, or people who do these very elaborate. Halloween festival, fall festival kinds of yard designs. But trick-or-treating your name, just to be clear, is Monday, October 31st, which is Halloween. They often and almost always fall on the same day in Ames. Unless there's a football game, we tend to do trick-or-treating on Halloween with recommended hours from 5:30 to 7:30. We recommend those hours because it is dark early at this time of year. We have people that would like a time limit on participation. But again, for those participating, simply turn on your outside light so people know that you're participating. If you have your light off, then you really should avoid those homes and have a safe and happy Halloween this year, trick-or-treating those hours between 5:30 and 7:30.
Okay. You know, as you started the introduction to the topic of water, I couldn't help but be thinking on I like your emphasis that it's always appropriate to talk water, and there's no point in us taking it for granted.
Yeah, water is a limited resource like so many others that we use, that we've come accustomed to. And I think we all just need to have an attitude of realizing those are limited resources and doing our best to conserve. We talk a lot about this with the electric utility. I am concerned. I think a lot of people are concerned about utility bills and costs going into the winter. And so anytime you can conserve, there's a financial incentive built right in. If that's your concern, and then I think that's a great motivator. Some people are motivated to conserve because they feel of great concern for the earth and limiting natural resources. I mean, honestly, it just doesn't matter what motivates you. I think the important thing is that you realize that we cannot use natural resources with unlimited capacity and think they'll be around forever. They just simply won't. It is something you need to be aware of. The one thing that we really encourage people to produce less of, again, we've talked about this before, is waste and waste management. We've talked about trying to reduce the amount of things you throw away, to use things over and over again, to be creative in your opportunity to recycle. And, you know, all of our utilities are part of that. We do waste management through our resource recovery plant. We do electricity through our electric department, and, of course, water through our water and pollution control department. I think Neil is back with us, and I'm sure he can talk a little bit about how the utility sort of changes, continuing that conservation message into the winter, but just some of the ways that they sort of shift, and, again, maybe an update on that water plant demolition.
Welcome, Assistant Water and Pollution Control Director Neil Weiss. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me on this morning. Sorry about that, being a little bit late. But yeah, as Susan mentioned, as far as the water conservation, this time of year, sometimes we have people that leave their hoses hooked up, and this is right around the time where things start freezing at night, and that can really cause a lot of water loss. Especially in some irrigation systems. So that's something that we always tell people to keep in mind this time of year. Get those irrigation systems blown out as good as possible so they don't freeze up and end up bursting the pipes and creating a large water loss.
Good advice.
And Susan mentioned that old water plant demolition project. That's certainly been one of the bigger projects in our department right now. It's there's a contractor out of Minnesota that's been working on this for a number of months now. And I don't know if the public out there has been keeping track, but we do have a webcam that's on that site 24/7 where it takes a picture, a snapshot every 5 minutes. So our Facebook page, we actually have that live, we're calling it live stream, but it's really just a picture snapshot every couple minutes. So you can continuously watch the project, and that's we've got a lot of good feedback from the public that's a great way to track things and how it's going with that project.
And that's on the City of Ames website?
Yes, it is. It's on our department webpage, the Water and Pollution Control Department webpage. There's a link there for the live stream, and also on our Facebook page at Ames Water. We'll post that every couple days. Give the public an update, and there'll always be a link on there to click that and watch that live stream.
Ames Water.
That landscape has changed. Yes. Yep. Ames Water. That landscape on that project has changed tremendously in the past couple weeks. Some of the main treatment structures, the large concrete tanks, those have been taken down. The old brick tower there that, you know, a lot of people remember that old water plant site by, that has been removed as well. So that whole area there is really, the look has really changed. The contractor is hoping to get things wrapped up in November, kind of button the site up for winter. The same contractor will be removing the high school here in Ames. So they'll move to that over the winter and then come back in the spring to do some underground work. There's some raw water piping. There's some finished drinking water piping on that site still that we utilize. So they'll be doing some updates to those utilities and hoping to wrap the project up around June, July of next year.
I see. And what would the public be able to envision there? Is it, will it be available to the public? Is it going to be parkland, or just curious?
No, it's going to remain City of Ames property. We're in conversations with other departments. You know, the power plant is right by that location. The electric department is there, so So we're going to do something on that site where it can benefit all departments. So it'll probably be a shared use of the site for multiple city departments, but it will remain in, City of Ames property and for our organization.
How expansive is it? Is it a few acres or?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd say the site, it does go to the east pretty far. There's probably right around 3 acres there.
Uh-huh.
For a majority of the site, but we do have our high service pump station where we still pump water out to the public from that spot there on the site. We used to have two large reservoirs too on that site. So it's we certainly want to keep it secure. It's that'll be infrastructure that will be there for the long term. So
okay. And that will be, it's on East Lincoln Way, basically east of the recycling plant, and or on
right there on just east,
probably more on 6th. Yeah. Yep. Sure. I was a little too far south. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah.
So other projects going on, if I could just touch on a little
sure.
bit, I have a little bit of time here, on our wastewater side, the big project is our nutrient modifications project. So our current plant doesn't remove nitrogen and phosphorus with the current treatment scheme. So we're contracting with a consultant right now to start design of a new treatment process and essentially a brand new plant. So we're planning on doing this over 3 phases over 20 years. This will be phase 1 design and construction. So we're currently in design right now. We're hoping to wrap things up in a year and start that project here in a year, but that'll essentially be a brand new plant for us down at our water pollution control facility south of town. We're looking at a lot of new technologies right now. There's really 3 technologies we've narrowed it down to. We're going to have to select one of those here in the near future and start moving forward with final design for that project. So that's a real exciting thing. So that's removing all the nutrients inside the fence or at the plant. And we have other projects that we're even going outside of the fence in the watershed north of Ames, removing nutrients before they even enter the stream. So those are some other new exciting projects that we have going on right now. We're actually starting the first big project for us for those nutrient modifications. It's wetlands, saturated buffers, bioreactors, and we're actually going to be starting a lot of that saturated buffer and bioreactor project this winter into spring of next year. And that's a program that this will be the first year of the program, but we really see this continuing into the future, having multiple phases of this and trying to put as many of these edge of field practices on farm fields that tie into the tile outlets, trying to put as much of these in Story County as we can over the years.
Neil, this is Mike Metz, and I had a question about, we're talking about the watersheds. How is the drought situation having an impact on the aquifer? Is that something you're monitoring?
Yeah, that's a great question. We do monitor that on really a weekly basis, but there's really a monthly report that we look at. So we have transducers on all of our wells across town, so 22 wells. That's really where we monitor a lot of the aquifer level. As the streams and rivers continue to dry up with this drought, those are really what are recharging our aquifer. So, we have seen a slow decline in the overall aquifer level, but it's really not as bad as we thought it would be. There's been some timely rains that have really helped out in that situation. So we're staying at pretty steady levels right now. It's something we continue to monitor, but it's not something that's of a major concern right now. So hopefully we get some snow this winter and snow melt, and we can hopefully recharge things come springtime.
Good to know. Is there anything else, Neil Weiss?
Just encourage people to go check out our Facebook page, check out that live stream of the old water plant demolition. It's Ames Water on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Neil Weiss, our assistant, Water and Pollution Control Director Have a good weekend.
Have me on.
Thank you, folks. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Then they came and stole our fire, put us in a cage we could never change. We used to be so free, get back to who we used to.
A little more Ray Sarasoga. Hey, let's welcome Mary Wilkins with ISU Extension. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Great to have you with us on Local Talk once again. What's new in the extension world?
Well, we are really gearing up, and I want to note that I'm sharing the spotlight this morning. I am serving on a committee for the Story County College Access Network. And so I am going to share this morning with our Story County College Access Network director. So we acronym that as STAN, and Jeanette Fulton is with us as well. Jeanette, do you want to share a little bit about STAN first, and then we'll share about our program?
Welcome.
Absolutely. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful having you with us. Yeah.
Fantastic. Story County College Access Network. So short for, shortened to SCAN because it's a mouthful. It is a grant from Iowa College 8, and our efforts is basically to convene organizations and get kids and families thinking about post-secondary education. So any efforts that uplift that post-secondary envisioning and thinking exposure, that's our realm. And basically we convene organizations or identify gaps. And we do that work, and I am happy to share the spotlight with Mary and so many wonderful organizations.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so the network is the Story County College Access Network. So what is your mission there?
So it has college in the name, but is any accreditation that provides that economic mobility for post-secondary. So we want youth start thinking about their future now, when they're in middle school, when they're elementary school, high school, definitely. So they start thinking in any sort of accreditation. So that could be a 2-year degree, 4-year degree, a trade, anything that provides them that economic mobility. That our mission is to get that information out to those families and those youth. They don't necessarily get it all the time, and the resources are there. They belong to all of our kids, and that is our effort.
Is there any workshops planned or public meetings we could learn about?
Yes, absolutely. So we wanted to share about a career fair that this committee has put together, and it is for middle school students, and it is going to be a countywide experience. It's going to be held on Monday, October 24th, at the Ames Public Library in the auditorium from 5 to 7 p.m. And so it doesn't matter what school a middle school student is from. They are all welcome. and invited to be a part of this event. So the event itself is sponsored by Tyson, where the grant is connected to, and then certainly all of us on the team. And then there will be several other businesses represented. And so it really is an opportunity for students to either come on their own or come with their family and see, just recognize what kinds of possibilities are available, whether they know what they want to do now or not. Mm-hmm. As a middle schooler, having one there, it's okay to not know, but it is a great opportunity to come find out more, because sometimes it takes those experiences to find out, maybe help us learn what our passions are, or even what our skills are and how we might want to best use those skills. So there will be, I believe, over 15 different businesses there. Three of those businesses are actually going to have a 30-minute or one-hour session where they can have more interaction with those organizations, learn about their business, participate in some activities, all of those kinds of things as well. So I won't name them all because of time, but certainly we want people to know that this opportunity is coming up this Monday. Mm-hmm. Those that participate, the first 50 will automatically receive a gift card. And then those that participate will also have the awesome opportunity to have their information submitted into a drawing. Mm-hmm. So there are some great prizes afterwards too. And we really invite everyone to come be a part of this, especially those with middle school students.
And you mentioned Tyson's. Did I hear Tyson's? Are they like reserving the auditorium or the gathering spot there at the Ames Public Library?
So they are connected to the funding source. Mm-hmm. So they are sponsoring the event itself, but we'll have snacks and water. Ames Public Library is on the committee as well as several others, the Chamber, YSF, Extension, of course. So it's really that collaborative effort of everyone on the committee.
Yeah.
And then growing that even more so that it's a Story countywide experience.
Is this a first-time event?
It is, yes. So we are really looking forward to sharing this.
Oh, this is fantastic. This is a good reason to have you on community radio and have a public announcement like this for the first time. Absolutely. So we can only grow this. This sounds fascinating.
Yes. That is the goal. We want to have a great first event and continue on with this opportunity and just help those students recognize all the opportunities that really are available to them. Mm-hmm.
Jeanette, this is Mike Metz. I was wondering, with this opportunity, will the businesses perhaps offer a job shadow or maybe an internship for these individuals if they're really interested in pursuing one of these? Do you know?
Oh, so that is an excellent question. And that is something that has come up as well, because there are schools in Story County that, for example, Roland Story, they require for their high school graduation, they require to have some sort of work, work exposure. So it would be fantastic. And then that would be great to have that one-on-one connection. So we're hoping to guide that too. And it would be fantastic if all the schools in Story County had some sort of requirement or exposure for students, that sort of thing, to get to kind of explore their interests. So that would be fantastic. That would be our next our next desire. Let's see how this works, right?
Right, okay.
And did I connect all the dots? This is SCCAN is your acronym, Story County College Access, but it's a bit more far-reaching in your networking, it sounds like, than just college access.
Yes, absolutely. So it's interesting because I joke about that my job is I'm a community organizer. Basically, it's about all of us doing this work together. So there's wonderful organizations out there doing this work, right? Like Mary here, right here, she's a full example. She's running around all seven schools, mm-hmm. all seven districts all the time. So we're just capitalizing with what we have. So in that sense, yes, we're all, we're a collective. So our framework is collective impact, so that we all together, we can do this better than just working in silos. So it's really interesting. And I'm happy to talk about it more some other time.
Well, I think you've got it's a very far-reaching message, for sure. But is there anything else that we're overlooking here, Mary?
You know, we just want to invite everyone out to this opportunity. Again, it is October 24th from 5 to 7 p.m. Certainly, if there are any questions, we're happy to help with those. Mm-hmm. They can always contact the Story County Extension Office or the flyer, as it's been out and posted. All of our community organizations are listed on there. But if they do want to reach out to Story County Extension, they can call us at 515. I just lost our phone number. 515-337-1601. The information is also on our Facebook page and our webpage, which is extension.iastate.edu/story.
You do wonderful work with ISU Extension, both of you. And I'd be remiss not to mention all the ties that you have discussed in earlier programs about the 4-H. And I want to share with the world that on Monday, we're going to have a young woman from Madrid Middle School. Morgan Christensen is her name. And she's done a bird study. And as I was listening to her presentation at a recent Hawk Watch, at the High Trestle Hawk Watch, I couldn't help but be impressed by her presentation skills. And she said she learned it all through 4-H.
Oh, that is wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing.
Well, it is. It was just like a really caring moment. I said, oh, I can't wait to share that with Mary Wilkins or Amber Wingert or some of the folks that we have on KHOI. But we're going to have that on Monday at 7:15. So if they want to hear a mentor coming along and being a great voice for middle school individuals, that'll be Morgan Christensen on Monday. So I hope you folks have a great weekend.
Thank you. You all as well.
Okay.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. Hey, Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM. KHOI Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a show. If you have an interest in joining the Local Talk team as a reporter, the welcome mat is out here at 622 Douglas. Come join the Local Talk team by calling 515-292-2878 or go to the website where we are streaming live, khoifm.org. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to that website, khoifm, and find the yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit media in the highest regard. At community radio, you will hear items and stories you're not going to hear anywhere else. Community radio is unique in that way.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your summary of the news. Thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey. And thank you, Mike Murphy, for engineering. And thank you for all that you do for community radio. And thank you, co-host Mike Metz. Thanks to our guest Sam Cox, Neil Weiss, Mary Wilkins, and Jamae Colton. I have been your host, Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other artist you heard was Ray Zaragoza. We're running with the wolves again. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now!, followed by Adagio at 9 a.m. Hoping you have a great weekend, folks. Enjoy the birds. Get out in your backyard. Enjoy this weather. And remember, you, the listener, what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI Community Radio, and we will see you again on the radio.
Hello, I'm Tom Fleck, and you are listening to KHOI Story City, Ames.